X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Food Industry Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Food Podcast. I'm Sydney Perlmutter, Senior Food Industry Journalist and Webinar Moderator at xtalks.com, and today I'm joined by Aisha Rashid. Thank you so much for joining me. So I'm going to start us off with a rather concerning story. Now, there's been a recent detection of highly pathogenic avian influenza, or HPAI, in dairy cows, and it's taken the agricultural sector by surprise. Now, this development, which was announced earlier last week, introduces a significant twist in the ongoing saga of the H5N1 virus, which has been affecting birds globally in the U.S. since early 2022. And in fact, a case of HPAI has recently been confirmed in an individual in the U.S., and that was announced by Texas authorities and verified by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. And now this individual had been in contact with dairy cattle in Texas, which are believed to be infected with the HPAI virus. So federal and local veterinary officials have been investigating after dairy cows exhibited an unexplained illness syndrome, and this situation has raised numerous questions among livestock and influenza experts. The exact role of HPAI in this mysterious ailment remains unclear. Additionally, the discovery of dead wild birds carrying the virus at the affected farm suggests new biosecurity challenges in livestock settings. Now, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, the H5N1 subtype involved is from the 2.3.4.4b clade, with origins traced back to the B3.2 genotype in wild birds from November 2023. An analysis indicated no signs of mammalian adaptation or antiviral resistance in the virus sample from cows. Now, this was initially reported in dairy herds across the Texas Panhandle and other locations since late January. The affected cows underwent extensive testing for various illnesses. Now, with other causes ruled out, attention turned to the avian flu in cows. And although it's confirmed that HPAI is present, it's still uncertain if it's the sole cause of the symptoms observed, which include a significant reduction in milk production and unusual illness profiles, especially in mature cows. Now, in terms of some biosecurity concerns, the role of infected wild birds in spreading the virus raises, you know, these significant concerns. Experts emphasize the importance of addressing feed security and finding ways to reduce wild bird contact with livestock. Shared contaminated water sources have also been identified as a potential vector for virus spread, as seen in the transmission from poultry to baby goats in Minnesota. This incident prompts questions about the possibility of avian flu in cows going unnoticed in past epidemics. And some suggest that serologic studies could provide insights into whether previous outbreaks in cattle, possibly linked to influenza viruses, were overlooked. The similarities between the current mystery disease and the known milk drop syndrome added to the complexity of understanding HPAI's impact on dairy cows. So I'll just talk a bit about some safety measures and precautions. So the USDA and health officials have reassured the public about the safety of the commercial milk supply, emphasizing that pasteurization processes inactivate viruses and bacteria. Nonetheless, the presence of the virus in milk from symptomatic cows highlights the risks associated with consuming raw milk, which we have talked about before. The Nebraska Department of Agriculture's recent importation order for breeding female dairy cattle is a proactive measure aimed at protecting local herds from HPAI. And this order reflects the seriousness with which state authorities are approaching the HPAI threat. The detection of HPAI in dairy cows marks a concerning development for the U.S. dairy industry. While the immediate impact on milk supply is limited, the situation underscores the need for vigilance and enhanced biosecurity measures. Dairy farmers are advised to follow the guidance of federal and state veterinary authorities just to mitigate the risk and protect their herds. And as investigations continue, the agricultural community remains on alert for any new developments related to avian flu in cows. So now, but you know, it's a heavy topic, not exactly the happiest of news to report. But you know, upon writing about this, it just made me think of how, you know, the plant-based meat industry and maybe the lab-grown meat industry. Do you think they're capitalizing enough on the fact that all of these things could be avoided?
That's a great question. I think it's just a matter of time before they do capitalize. And I think they're right there at the doorsteps. But I think there are a couple of things they have to sort out before they're, you know, completely in the arena. And yeah, given these kinds of outbreaks, which we keep hearing about, they seem to be a lot more commonplace than once thought, perhaps. And so looking at alternatives definitely becomes more important and, again, brings into question again and again the current agricultural practices, especially around raising cattle and, you know, cross-contamination with other animals, in this case, birds that are carrying avian flu. So, and then the wastewater system and all of that, it just keeps coming up. And I just wonder when, you know, the USDA, the FDA, or whoever else is supposed to be overlooking these things are going to wake up and really take these issues seriously, because it's a public health issue here. It's not just to do with food, but it's also public health. Mm-hmm. And so this should be definitely something that should be on the radar. And especially after the pandemic, we know that, you know, we're so globally interconnected. You know, it's not that if something is in isolation, it's not in isolation in another country, like people say, it's only a plane ride away. And so, yeah, but yeah, great point about alternatives. And maybe this is the time to seriously begin exploring them, because it doesn't seem like these kinds of viruses and infections are going to go away. They're, you know, it seems to be a constant plague.
And I could be wrong about this, but it seems that, you know, viruses and you know, flus seem to get around a lot quicker in the animal community.
Yeah. Well, it's numbers and also proximity, right? We know how they're grown. Mm-hmm. Not the best practices. Mm-hmm. You're cramming so many animals into one confined space, and so diseases are rampant. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're given antibiotics just to curb infections. So it's a constant threat. It's just a matter of time before something extremely, you know, severe or deadly comes up. So it's not sustainable.
Yeah, and they can't exactly, you know, go to their farmers and say, hey, I'm sick. So it must take like a bit of time at least to realize, you know, that there is something going around.
Right.
And now the fact that a human has also been confirmed. Yep. Do you know, you know, how often that happens in these types of like animal viruses? If like it just doesn't seem like a very common occurrence to me.
Not too common, but not impossible, right? Because, you know, you have viruses, zoonotic viruses, and they can jump actually from animals to humans. And that's kind of what was thought happened with COVID, the SARS-CoV-2 virus that emerged. So, yeah, there's no ruling out jumping of viruses between species, between different animals and from animals to humans. So it's definitely a possibility.
And then, yeah, like I was saying, this is just another, you know, reminder about the importance of pasteurized milk and not to, you know, consume unpasteurized milk just because you think you may be getting some more, you know, health benefits from it.
You might think it's more organic and things like that. But there's a risk benefit, you know, associated with that. So
exactly. Okay, so now I will move on to our second story. Now, every year, the Financial Times unveils its list, a very anticipated list, of the America's fastest growing companies. Now, the list provides a snapshot of the dynamic shifts and growth trajectories across various sectors. And among these are the fastest growing food and beverage companies, featuring a diverse array of brands making significant strides in innovation, sustainability, and market expansion. Now, this prestigious list showcases 500 companies across the Americas, all of which have shown exceptional growth in their publicly disclosed revenues between 2019 and 2022. Now, this initiative bases its rankings on the compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, of each company's revenue, making it a significant and respected measure for assessing the swift rise and success of businesses in the Americas. So this list covers a wide range of industries, but of course I'm just going to be focusing on the food and beverage companies that have earned a spot on the list. And try to remember, if you recognize the name of a company. And I'll let you know as well which ones I remember from last year. So number one, which is ranked 118 on the list, is called So Good, So You. Now, this is a company founded in 2014, and it offers a variety of probiotic juice shots aimed at supporting immune health and digestive functions. Its commitment to using organic, non-GMO ingredients has resonated with health-conscious consumers, propelling them to the forefront of the fastest-growing food and beverage companies list. And its annual revenue is estimated at around $32.7 million, and it's growing at a CAGR of 71.18%. Not bad. Secondly, one of two beverage companies on the list is Soto Sake, ranked at 208. It was also founded in 2014 on the principles of tradition and modernity. The company crafts premium sake that appeals to both connoisseurs and new enthusiasts alike. Its meticulous brewing process, combined with sleek branding and marketing strategies, has catapulted it onto the list. Its annual revenue is approximately $96 million, growing at a CAGR of 45.02%. Next is Marfrig Global Foods, ranked 229. This is a Brazilian meatpacking giant, and it's made a mark by focusing on sustainability and ethical sourcing of meat. It was founded in 1986, and its aggressive expansion and investments in plant-based alternatives highlight its adaptability and foresight. According to Forbes, its annual revenue in 2023 was $25.3 billion, growing at a CAGR of 40.86%. Fourth on the list, and ranked 232, is called Ocean's Halo. With a mission to make seaweed a staple in Western diets, Ocean's Halo offers a range of seaweed-based snacks, broths, and sauces. The company's innovative use of seaweed not only taps into the trends of sustainable food sources, but it also caters to the rising demand for healthy snack options. Its annual revenue is estimated to be a little less than $5 million, growing at a CAGR of 40.03%. Number five on the list is called Avatar Natural Foods, ranked 275th. So it specializes in organic and natural foods, and it's quickly become a favorite among consumers seeking healthier lifestyle options. It was founded in 2007, and its range of products from organic grains to plant-based proteins addresses the growing demand for clean eating. Its revenue is estimated to be around $4 million a year, growing at a CAGR of 33.9%. Next is Smith Teamaker, and I remember this one from last year as well, our second and final beverage company on the list. So it's ranked at 313, and it blends artistry with craftsmanship, offering high-quality handcrafted teas that showcase unique flavors and blends since 2009. Its dedication to sourcing the finest ingredients and innovative approach to blending have made them stand out among tea enthusiasts. Current annual revenue is around $8.6 million and is growing at a CAGR of 29.95%. And number seven on the list, I also remember from last year, is The Andersons, ranking at 322. This was, I think, the oldest company on the list, founded in 1947. It's a diversified company with a strong foothold in the food industry. The company has seen remarkable growth due to its strategic investments in food processing and agricultural services. And its ability to innovate and adapt to market trends has made it a key player in the food and beverage industry. And as of December 2023, the Andersons' estimated annual revenue was $14.75 billion, growing at a CAGR of 29.36%. number eight, almost all the way through, ranked 334, is Colombia's Mass Organización, which has carved out a niche for itself by focusing on organic and fair trade certified products. Its dedication to ethical sourcing and environmental sustainability since 1975 has garnered a loyal customer base and distinguished them among the fastest growing food and beverage companies. Its annual revenue is around $3 million, growing at a CAGR of 28.46%. Next on the list is Jenny's Ice Creams, ranked at 350. It was founded in 2002, and it brings creativity and innovation to the forefront. With its unique ice cream flavors and commitment to using whole ingredients, Jenny's Ice Creams focuses on quality and community engagement, which has really resonated with consumers. Its annual revenue is currently around $35 million, growing at a CAGR of 27.35%. And lastly, number 10 on the list, and perfectly, actually, the list only featured 10 food and beverage companies. So these are them. Perfect 10, exactly. The last one is called Zolli Candy, ranked 472. And Zolli Candy is revolutionizing the confectionery market with its sugar-free candies that are actually good for your teeth. Founded by a young entrepreneur in 2014, the brand's focus on health, innovation, and social responsibility has made it a hit among both kids and parents. In 2018, the company earned $6 million in annual revenue, growing at a CAGR of 16.65%. Now, these companies on the list aren't just riding the wave of food industry trends, but they're creating ripples of change with their innovative products, sustainable practices, and consumer-focused strategies. So one major thing that I noticed across this list is that, you know, a lot of them put an emphasis on sustainability, and I think that's becoming so very important, especially as time goes on. And at this point, we all know the impact of the food industry on the environment. So out of this list, were there any companies that you yourself recognized?
I think the first one, So Good, So You.
Oh, yeah?
I think so. It just seemed familiar. And Anderson's
okay.
Also rang a bell.
Yeah.
But the other ones, I'm so sorry out there. Not too familiar or not familiar with them at all. But no, they seem like great companies. And you mentioned one of them. I'm not sure if it was Sake, which was like $1 billion company, it seemed like.
Oh, no, it wasn't that one. It was, there were a few that brought in over a billion or were in the billions.
Oh, okay, I thought I heard there was one.
One of them was the Brazilian meatpacking giant, Global Foods, and then I think the other one was the Andersons.
Yes. Okay, so those two.
Yeah.
Which have been around longer, so it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a very cool list. So 10 companies out of, what was the total number of companies on this?
500.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, not bad for, you know, food and beverage. And the companies, I also noticed that, like, they range in terms of, like, what they produce from, like, seaweed-based products to meat packaging and to you know, different, you know, all across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool to see. And definitely, like you said, it seems to be a big focus on sustainability. I just wonder, it's a big trend, so it's almost a buzzword of sorts.
Mm.
So it becomes really important to distinguish and delineate, you know, between companies that are actually committed to sustainability versus companies just using it as just another label or in their marketing. So, but hopefully, these companies are truly committed to genuine sustainability. Mm-hmm. And I also noticed that, you know, several of the newer companies were all founded around the same time, 2014 ago. I'm not sure what was going on back then, but that was interesting, too. But yeah, really interesting to hear about these fastest growing companies and very high CAGRs for some of them, as high as like 70%. So, definitely a lot of momentum there for some of them.
And I appreciated the range, like you, in terms of some companies that are a little bit more behind the scenes and some that are right at the forefront. The only one I'd ever heard of was Jenny's Ice Creams.
Oh.
I think that's an American ice cream brand that is very popular, and its flavors sound delicious, and I think it's sort of very like specialty, and they have sort of flavors you would never even think of.
Right.
And what I also appreciate about this list is that, you know, it's not just going off of revenue. It's by that CAGR, so we have quite a wide range of annual revenues. And the last one that I mentioned, Zolli Candy, when I say young entrepreneur,
it's really interesting. Yeah.
I think I believe that the founder was like a teenager when he
founded
the company, which like is fantastic. I really appreciate that, you know, even very young entrepreneurs can break into the food industry and be successful if you have a novel idea and you market, you know, a company in a very special way. So
it's never too early
or never
too late.
Exactly. So. Yeah.
And that was actually a really cool innovation where you said the candies are actually good for your teeth.
Yeah.
Do they contain fluoride or like whitening
agents
or something?
I think, and I'll have to check on this, but potentially good for your teeth may just mean that they're sugar-free.
Okay. So they're not bad for your teeth.
Yeah.
By that token, they're good for your teeth.
But they may also contain, contain fluoride. I'm not too sure. But I think the sugar-free aspect of it is the big seller.
For sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. On its own, that's, a no-brainer.
But yes, I'll, when this list comes out, I'll be circling back again next year to talk about, hopefully 10 at least have made the list again next year. And I'll see which ones have made double or triple repeats, since this year. But yeah, I agree. Love this list. It's always fun to cover things like this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, well, that's the end of this episode of the X Talks Food Podcast. If you like today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the X Talks Food Industry Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X Talks on social media. Email podcast@xtalks.com or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.